Good morning. As she was presenting my background and named or addressed all these different areas I worked with, I guess it's a good lead into my topic, which is conceptualization of behavior. Because as I'm sure all of you have been working with research and practice in this area and have discovered all these different components are very much have associations and interrelationships. I do not, and my co-presenter, Dr. Carol Roy, do not have any relationships to disclose. What I want to talk to you a little bit about, very briefly, the overall purpose of this presentation is that we this study was funded by the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and the study was a randomized controlled trial of some interventions which we developed for sexual health promotion, and basically we focused on decreasing unintended pregnancy, decreasing substance use, violence, and STI and HIV. We also, in our other studies, had looked at reductions of psychological distress and depression as a result of our interventions. In the follow-up, we had like a one-year follow-up on these interventions that were conducted within the community. We partnered with the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District and the university to develop these interventions and to conduct the research. At the end of the intervention, what we've been doing is really looking at our baseline data and making some comparisons at our 6- and 12-month follow-up and trying to assess what exactly we can do to try to improve the interventions that we have in place. We've been looking at initial data to assess changes that we might need to incorporate. We couldn't do that as we're going through the intervention and doing the follow-up, simply because if you've already got the intervention going, you don't want to bias it and somehow start including some data information that you possibly didn't at the very first. So we're looking at initial baseline data to try to discover what relationships or associations were present, and to try to understand how we might enhance or improve the interventions we have. We do that always for a number of reasons, and I'm sure all of you are familiar with these. Number one is to find out how well we did, and the other one is to find out what exactly we could do that would have improved it, the interventions, particularly for individuals who have report a previous experience of certain events or behaviors that they've been involved in, etc. So the purpose of this particular analysis that I'm going to present right now is to look at the differences in behaviors and psychosocial variables in terms of experience self-report of anal sex. We were particularly interested in looking at this simply because we realized anecdotally and, of course, within the literature that heterosexual anal intercourse is actually becoming a lot more common among adolescents. And some reports say it's practiced by 16% to 35% of couples. and we know that also homosexuality and bisexuality among women, we found that may be associated with HIV risk for women, and that there's some evidence that women who have sex with women may be at elevated risk for HIV, and that HIV-positive women are actually more likely to report being bisexual, and women who have sex with women are, in fact, more likely at some point to have had vaginal and anal sex with men that they know to be bisexual, and are less likely than other women to use condoms. So this just gives you sort of a background, and there's much more information that could substantiate the need to look at heterosexual anal intercourse. These we've highlighted simply because we have found anecdotally that these were in particularly quite true within the study group that we were analyzing. So we also found that compared to heterosexual women, that there is a greater proportion of women have sex with women who were injecting drugs. And this is a little bit of extra background, is that researchers in the past have thought that heterosexual anal sex is a way to prevent pregnancy, but there are studies that show that even among women who actually are adolescent girls who are using hormone contraception, that they're still having anal sex and actually having unprotected So we don't think that that really seemed to be a significant reason or an important reason that they were having anal sex. We found that young women were less likely in the literature to use condoms for anal intercourse than for vaginal intercourse. There was a qualitative study that my colleague did in which she talked to 12 females, and they described it. Heterosexual anal sex is painful. However, some actually reported that they had heterosexual anal sex because it felt good and also painful at the same time. Some people actually reported that they enjoyed this form of intercourse. Many of them talked about, anecdotally, their use of alcohol when they were involved or had decided to have an experience of anal sex. So we wanted to look at this also. So for anecdotally and also looking at the literature, these are reasons we wanted to particularly focus on this particular, what we would call sexual risk behavior. Some people believe it's not a risk behavior, and that is an individual determination, I believe. So within the study, and it was conducted in San Antonio, so we had a smaller African-American adolescent population than we did Mexican-American, simply because of the demographics associated with this particular area. So the people who went into our study had a history of high-risk sexual behavior, STI or violence, and they, as I previously noted, they were recruited from the Metropolitan Sexual Health Clinics for participation in our project. We did bivariate and logistic regression analysis to compare the sexual risk behavior by anal sex experience, and we wanted to identify then predictors of it, and this will give you an idea in terms of what we found. This is typical of actually some of our other subset analyses. We've done secondary analyses to look at differences by ethnicity. And African-American adolescent women had fewer self-reported experiences of ever having had anal sex than Mexican-American. There was a significant difference on this. And if you look through, they also, those who have an experience of anal sex reporting a higher incidence of having run away, more of them have an STI history, more of them have had pap smears with HPV. Remember, that is back before we changed the guidelines, okay? And more of them have a history of chlamydia. And interesting, more of them have a history of using withdrawal for actually for contraception. We looked at abuse because that was one of the inclusion criteria in the study. And so consistent with previous literature, we found that those who have an experience of heterosexual anal sex had very high reports of physical abuse and sexual and psychological forced sex. As you can see all the way down there, it was pretty high, 37%, molestation 32%, hurt during sex 13.1%, afraid to say no, etc. Ever pregnant, more of those who had never had anal sex reported ever being pregnant, which kind of also contradicts the idea that you have anal sex because you're trying to use it for formal contraception or keep from having, maybe, not really. So sexual risk behavior, excuse me, more of those who reported heterosexual anal sex or bisexual, had group sex, sex with women, gave oral sex, sex with bisexual men, all the way down, sex with friends for benefits, 55.7%. The IV drug use, the 19.7. So as you can see from really very briefly reviewing this, they're across the board on bivariate analyses. They're just higher risk behaviors. More of them drank alcohol. The number that used cocaine, 54.3% of those who had anal sex, and benzodiazepine, ecstasy, marijuana. It was across the board very high in cigarette use. So we know that that is a high risk, obviously it's a high risk group for a multitude of reasons. So we entered these bivariate variables and those that we found to be significant into a logistic regression. And we actually found the following, and that is that ethnicity, as we had already shown, is is a significant factor in that more of the Mexican-American adolescent females were experiencing this. Those who had sex with friends, that was significant. Giving oral sex, sexual molestation, use of methamphetamines, and ecstasy. So, in summary, these analyses identify that adolescents who engaged in heterosexual anal intercourse experience higher risk behaviors, substance use, violence, fewer health promotion behaviors, previous experiences of arrest, and lower performance in schools identified. An assessment of the full model was significant, suggesting that our model actually predicted anal sexual activity. Those who had engaged in sex with friends for benefits and who engaged in oral sex were more likely to have anal sex. Those who had molestation were more likely to engage in it, and likelihood to engage in anal sex differed according to the previous drug history. Methamphetamine users were much higher in ecstasy users also. So this secondary analysis really provides that evidence that, number one, anal sex sexual is becoming more prevalent among young women, and that the risk factors are very important and very much a part of that experience. And some of the reasons that young women report engaging in anal sexual activity would perhaps require a little more understanding. We believe that it is important, and sexual health campaigns and programs do address this risk behavior to some degree, but some of those relationships, we believe, have not been emphasized quite as much in some of the sexual health programs which are present in communities, and of course that would also vary by community and region and by state. So, but we say based upon what we found that it is a very high-risk behavior and is very common among adolescent women. Thank you. Does anyone have any questions? Thank you very much.